digital television, whether it's CLFDM or 8VHB, you can put one channel right next to each other. Whereas in the analog world, we always had to have a guide band or a space, so that way one sound carrier won't bang into the next picture carrier, and that upper picture carrier won't bang into the lower sound carrier. And that had a lot to do with the kind of filtering and things that we would do at high power that made it difficult, which is actually kind of easy today, but that's besides the point. So, the stations have to move. Now, I'm going to get a little more specific. I'm going to drop again.
Try to get a break in here for a moment.
I'm hearing an IOLP thing going on there. So, the stations either chose to move from a UHF to a high VHF or a low VHF, or whatever they sold it for, by the way. The FCC has, at this point, let many of the stations know, not all of them, where they're moving to at this point. But supposedly, by the first week of April, a list will be published of all to see, and how much they get sold for. So the concept is now to move all this stuff below channel 35 and leaving 33 blank, which is because that's where the National Radio Radio Astronomy Observatory lives, so to speak. So throughout the country, there's actually a note 33. And there's a number of different ways in which the stations can play this game. They can either move to a VHF, either a low or high VHF, and be on their own, or they can be joined up with another broadcaster and put their stream, so that way you have two TV stations on one transmitter, or you do nothing and the FCC will tell you where you got to go. K2RIW, K2J.
Yeah, channel 33 calculates as 584 to 590. So I guess you're saying that's part of National Radio Astronomy Observatory. Because I didn't recognize that particular frequency. And I know that Joe wants to ask you some more questions about this, but you said 84 megacycles has been sold. If I divide 6 megacycles into 84, I get 14 channels. So 14 channels worth. From channel 35 up to, I guess, what used to be 51. 35, yeah. Up to 69. Oh, yeah, here we go. 59. So approximately channel 35 up, all those guys are going to be moving, and they're given financial incentive to move. And Joe's got some questions about all of the above. WA2RYY, K2RYW. Go ahead, Joe.
You don't have to be above 35 to have to move. Because of the repacking and the you know, the co-channel interference and placement of stations, everybody's moving, it seems.
So, essentially all the frequencies above 600 megacycles are no longer going to be over-the-air television broadcast. Is that true, Joe? Eric?
Well, that's true in a certain sense, but in a virtual sense, no, because a lot of these broadband offerings are going to be TV services.
How about that? You got it, Joe.
Yeah, my original question, Eric, was this. For all the people listening out there on IRLP and 2 meters and so forth and what have you, where can they find out this information so they can read for it for themselves? That was the first initial question I was asking about all this. And channel 37 used to be the slot where radio astronomy was, I guess, allowed to listen because there was no TV channels outside of the United States. So you're telling me now channel 35 and above will be gone. So what's going to be on 34 and 33? Is that going to be where the radio astronomy goes? And you're actually going to only go up to channel 32?
Yeah, there's stuff on either side of it. It's been that way for years and years and years, so. Actually, the first place you can go for information on this stuff is FCC.gov. I just happen to be reading from a trade paper because they're up to the minute, literally.
Yeah, but when you go on FCC.gov, if you don't understand where to go in there, you could go crazy trying to find out exactly where all this stuff is. That's why I'm asking the question, specifically what website on the FCC system of websites where somebody can find this information. Is it that plain out in the open, Well, you have to search pretty hard for it.
Well, the FCC reworked their website. It's actually way convoluted now. It's pretty easy with the old website. They don't hide anything. It's the people who do the programming. They're a little out of their minds. Now, let me bring it up, and I'll tell you exactly where to go.
Hey, Joe, we're about to tell you where to go.
And everybody else also.
That was meant to be left-handed humor.
I understand that. Another question related to this, does this affect Canadian stations broadcasting? Because I noticed that from looking at their, some information I found on Canadian stations, some of their TV traffic is analog and some of it is digital. And I guess they're running the same format as in the USA, but will they change also?
Waiting for it to drop. It's up and up. Korea, believe it or not, is actually now in the process of distributing ATSC-3. You got to consider that this whole thing with ATSC-1 was developed by Zenith, is one of the major inventors, which was bought by LG, and LG is a big force in Korea, and they're pushing it, even though our version of ATSC-3 standard isn't finished. It's supposed to be finished probably by before the summer. Most of it is already pretty much in place and locked in terms of RF and how to get it there. There's some of the interactive stuff that they're still working on in terms of picking standards. So the Koreans have chosen to already go ahead and start distributing their stuff. And they're actually being able to broadcast just stuff in 4K. And I don't remember whether they use 6 or 8 megahertz. I have to look that up. But that doesn't really matter. For us, ATSC-3 will be a 35 megabit stream as opposed to a 20 megabit stream. You can do more with it.
I assume you probably have some more questions on this one, Joe, so that's why I'm giving you some space.
No, I guess if you said it, the stuff is on the FCC.gov site, I guess it's like go find hunt for it yourself. I thought it'd be an easy answer, but I guess not.
Yeah, my understanding of what Eric is saying is that they've hired probably an outside agency to rework their website to make it more attractive looking, but many of the people who build these websites don't really understand how to make things user-friendly for those who are not in the business, so to speak. So Eric thinks that it didn't become easier to use. It's going to take some searching. We'll eventually find out exactly where you go into that site in order to get this info. So when it comes to the ordinary trade magazines, Electronic Design News, Microwave Journal, Microwaves and RF, and so on, it is my guess, Eric, that very little of this specific information about our new digital television standard, ATS-3, which is about to become the standard for the United States in the next 39 months or so. I think very little of that information has appeared in the ordinary RF trade journal for electronic engineers in the RF world. That's my impression so far. I've seen very little of it, little hints, but right now you have to go to the horse's mouth, the FCC itself, or to Eric Curtis to get the information. KE2EJ for any comments, K2LIW in the TechNet.
All right, the easiest way to get to the stuff on the FCC website at this point is just to be able to go FCC.gov/MB, which is Media Bureau. If you actually want the actual URL, it's FCC.gov/media/block-menu-block-4. Or you go to head page, you browse by bureaus and offices, and you go to the Media Bureau. And once you get to the Media Bureau page, on the left-hand side, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 things down, you'll see it says Broadcast Incentive Officing. And there's a whole lot of stuff there. I get more stuff from things like TVtechnology.com, which is a broadcast trade paper. There's BNC, Broadcasting and Cable. There's a couple of other ones still. You can go there. They're actually, you don't have to get the headlines off of them. You don't have to pay for being on their site. So, but you got to remember they're commercial sites intended towards a particular industry. HRIWK2J.
And you explained last time, Eric, and I don't quite understand the rationale, that this time around, in order to get the new ATS-3 standard, the COFDM method of broadcast, instead of the 8 VSB that we're currently using for over-the-air broadcast, you're going to need a new converter or a new set. And the last time they made a major change from analog to digital over-the-air, we were issued these coupons that aided us in buying that converter. And this time, no coupons are going to be issued. They're going to be, if I'm strictly an over-the-air broadcast television watcher who doesn't use cable or satellite, and I want my set to continue operating, I have to put a converter in front of it or go out and buy a new set. And so the fact that this decision has been made that obsoletes my current equipment, some of us are going to get a little bit unhappy about that. And the fact that we're not offered a coupon is going to make us a little bit more unhappy. That we, if I was a economically disadvantaged person, I could get fairly angry about this. You and I have got the resources. We can go out and buy 10 converters, no problem. It's not going to really hurt our overall lifestyle. But I really think they should have offered coupons, but maybe I'm a little naive. KE2EJ, K2LIW.
K2LIW, KE2EJ. Well, I mean, if you look at what's going on in Washington now, there's no reason for you to scratch your head about it. There's this other thing, is that one of the arguments that's being used is that nobody's being forced to stop broadcasting on ATS-C. That's Alpha, Tango, Sierra, Charlie. You keep saying ATS. Three, and it's ATS-C3. Nobody's forcing you to turn off your ATS-C1 transmitter. And as I told you last time, one of the possibilities is that a whole bunch of stations will reduce their bit rate as they go to ATS-C3 and put those transmitters on, and they'll leave one station in a local area, which will have almost everybody at a slower bit rate and standard definition to keep those TV sets that currently work working. The only thing is they won't see high def.
Now, the ATS-C1, I'm going to guess, that we're using right now, works with my set. ATS-C3 is going to be the new standard, and I need some new equipment. I'm having trouble believing you're going to broadcast both simultaneously on the same RF channel. Does that mean that when you're...
That's not wrong.
Okay? So, in other words, with a lower bit rate, you're telling me both standards can be transmitted...
Now, let me stop you and start again so you understand.
Go for it, Eric.
Okay. We have the Metropolitan TV Organization in New York, which is a consortium of all the broadcasters. It's, you know, Channel 2, Channel 4, Channel 5, Channel 7, Channel 9, Channel 11, Channel 13, 21, and a bunch of others, right? What we'll do is a bunch of us, as a group, will say, okay, Channel 2, 4, and 7, and maybe 13 are going to go ATS-C3. So what we'll do is say, we'll have a deal with Channel 11, and we'll pay for it. They will carry the streams of 2, 4, 7, and 13 as a standard definition image, and probably at a really stinky bit rate that doesn't look so hot. Okay? So, in the New York area, there will be one place, one RF channel, actually has everybody on it. Okay? Of those people who decided they want to put an ATS-C3 transmitter in service. Now, what we do is we manipulate the PSIPs in the stream, so when you go to your TV set and you tune to channel 13.1, your TV set is actually picking up channel 11, but it's telling you you're seeing 13.1. You get it now?
To a certain degree, I've got that right now. The set that, my television set that's branded, my television channel is branded 33, really is RF channel 3, if I understand you correctly. So right now, the difference between the branding that we know of and we're familiar with and the real RF frequency we're on, I think less than half the channels right now are on the same RF channel as the branding number. Is that true, Eric? Go ahead.
That's true. Right here, yeah, okay. Oh, for UHF to see the turning on. The point here is that channel 11 will be transmitting on RF 11. They'll be transmitting channel 11, but they'll also on the same stream be carrying channel 13, channel 2, and channel 4. So, even though channel 2 is transmitting ATSC 3, they're also on channel 11 RF transmitting ATSC 1. So that way, people who happen to have the ATSC 1 sets, they can pick up something.
Yeah, right now I might watch channels 13-1-2-3, and they happen to be on the same RF frequency. When I'm watching channel 9-1-2-3-4, there's really two different RF frequencies in there, so that the spots of my set knows the difference between the branding number that I'm familiar with and the real RF frequency it has to tune to. And so I think you're telling me that what is now RF frequency channel 11 is really going to be a whole lot of not 11-1-2-3-4-5. The set will be one step more smart. It'll know that 13 and 7 and a whole bunch of other places really are RF 11. And so if my set does a proper search, it's going to figure this all out. KE2EJ for any corrections. K2RIW in the TechNet.
K2RIW, K2J. In the case of channel 9 being two RF channels, same thing is true with channel 5. Don't forget they're both owned by Fox, and they own both transmitters, so they can do what they want. They actually transmit the 9 as an SD on the channel 5 frequency, and they transmit channel 5 as an SD on the channel 9 frequency. They simply did that to be able to maintain their larger bit rate for their HD, which is not very HD. They only transmit 720p, they don't transmit 1080i, so. Stuff like that you can do. And the receivers are smart. Receivers, once this receiver scans, and the new receivers, you don't even have to force them to scan. They just do it when they turn it on. They will in turn scan and figure out who's where and put the right channel numbers up for the user, and the user doesn't have to think anything about what RF channel they're on. That's the way it is now. And the new ATSC 3 receivers will actually have an ATSC 1 tuner in it alongside it. Actually, it wouldn't be a different tuner because the channel's in the same place, but right at the back end of the tuner where it gets demodulated, that's where the difference would be.
I'm pretty sure that the new television set I'll be buying a year or two from now will be ATSC 3 COFDM. Will it still have any capability for 8 VSB, or is that going to be thoroughly dropped on the new sets that I can purchase? Over to you, Eric.
Well, I will repeat my very last statement, that the new receivers that will be capable of receiving ATSC 3 will also be able to receive ATSC 1. And the tuner, the RF path of the tuner to where it becomes INQ is exactly the same. The method of deriving INQ is different, and it will be two different chips in there. And the receiver right now, I opened up one of those cheap converter boxes, and it got a grand total of 3 chips in it for the whole thing, plus the tuner. Well, the type of VLSI that we got these days, and I'm not talking about an LPGA or something like that, where it's really expensive. You know, you can bang out those kinds of fixed paths these large arrays pretty cheaply. K2RIW, K2J.
Yeah, I'll admit that you said it on the previous transmission, and I didn't catch it. So now it's more clear. So the real difference is the IF strip of the set. The RF front end is almost the same. Make me a guess, Eric, and I know it's going to be difficult. The real local New York City area, ATS-3 capability. Make me a guess as to, will some of the channels be transmitting over the air ATS-C-3 6 months from now, year and a half from now? When do you believe some of them will be doing it? Over to you, Eric, K2RIW.
Well, right now there's an experiment going on with some distributed transmitters in Oregon and Washington State using the current test version of ATS-C3. The FCC has a hearing coming up on ATS-C3. Really what they're waiting for is the finalization of the format, which is coming pretty quickly. And then they will probably start allowing a change. Now, why would you want ATS-C3? The driving force would be to be able to watch 4K and HDR and a bunch of other things. Plus, you can pack more channels in it. As of this point, believe it or not, in the last 2 years, 4K sets have been sold. There's been 12 million of them sold, so that's any indication. The broadcasters won't really go to ATS-C3 until a good number of millions of sets with ATS-C3 tuners in them are available. And that's not the case yet, and that's not going to be the case until at least the standard gets standardized, and then the FCC goes ahead. So the reality is that you could possibly see somebody taking a jump in the water comes the end of the year, beginning of next year. But I wouldn't hold my breath.
When you go into your local television sales stores, which have a great big television section, and you look at that beautiful high-resolution 4K picture coming from a canned program, it's never over the air. It's always a canned program and coming from a disc, a tape, or whatever.
Not always. It might be coming from satellite.
Okay, so you're saying some satellite has got 4K, and the picture is beautiful, and 12 million of those have been sold. And to some degree, those 12 million 4K sets for people who desire over-the-air broadcast are going to need some kind of a change to the front end to be able to be capable of ATS-C3. Is that going to be a simple converter, or is my brand new 4K capable set now going to become obsolete and I have to go out and buy another one? Over to you, Eric, K2RIW.
RIW, K2J, absolutely not, okay? I'll give you a couple of reasons why. We've come up with a standard that they've put a lot of money into, and it's called HDMI. And if you happen to have an EchoStar box or a dish box or a DirecTV box or a cable box that's capable of 4K, it has an HDMI connector on it that you connect to your TV. One single cable goes between the two boxes, and you've got your 4K pictures. Comes time that ATS-C3 starts broadcasting, it'll be a box that you hook to your antenna, and it'll have an HDMI connector on it, and that will connect to your TV set. And actually, it'll probably also have an optical audio connector, which actually most of the stuff does today. So if you've got the nice big fancy TV, and you're making a home theater, you want the 5 or the 7.1, you're going to hook that little optical cable into the receiver of your choice to give you your 5 or 7.1. K2RIW, K2J.
Yeah, that optical cable works very well. I just recently bought a sound bar, and I looked at the nice red signal coming out of that optical cable that went into my sound bar, and it does a very nice job.
Obviously, that's got the bit rate capable of transmitting all kinds of video and so on. So the HDMI cable is going to be the answer.
But actually, in your optical cable, it's only 384 kilobits. It's AC3. It's actually a compression.
But that same optical cable, if my set was issuing it, that optical cable could have all kinds of bit rates. Isn't that true, Eric?
Yeah. This actually has a trade name. It's called Toslink, and it follows, believe it or not, follows the AES standard, which is your Audio Engineering Society. So, we actually use the same thing in the recording industry, in the commercial world, lots of different variations of it. But you'll find on a lot of sets, or at least on a lot of receivers, not only an optical one, but what they call coax, which is basically the same stream, just instead of it being carried by light, it's carried by coax.
The converter boxes that we bought from Radio Shack and other places, Magnavox, Radio Shack, Motorola, I don't know who all was selling them, 5 or so years ago, I think they ran in the vicinity of $80, and you got a $40, I think you got a $40 coupon. I think each human being could request as many as 2 coupons worth $40 each and use them one at a time. So the converter box was around $80 5 years ago. With the usual amount of inflation, the new ATSC3 RF over-the-air broadcast converter box, would you guess it's going to be in the vicinity of $100 when it becomes available a year or so from now, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. Well, to be quite honest, I think it's going to be reasonably cheaper, and here's why. When we made the transition from analog to digital, a lot of the TV sets either had an RF input, which means you needed a modulator, put it on channel 3 or whatever, or you use a video and audio cable to get to your TV set so you could display it. With ATSC3, you don't need none of that. You basically need the tuner and the device, which actually decodes the stream and turns it into another digital output that goes over your HDMI cable. So there's no point of having analog out.
Yeah, I'm guessing there won't be a ATSC3 converter box with a channel 3 analog output. I think that's going to be abandoned. HDMI is going to be the main output. My soundbar will accept 4 different techniques. HDMI, optical cable, and a bunch of various formats for what are they called? RCA phono plug type things, coax cable like things. And some of them are higher in resolution than others.
You'd have a coax input which takes the ATSC3, the ATF. Darn it, I'm getting my acronyms messed up. AC3, which would be the same as the stream that comes in through the optical, but then you'll have a bunch of RCA phono connectors, which you'll be using for left, right, left front, right front, center, left rear, right rear, subwoofer, blah, blah, blah.
That's if I want to movie theater simulation in my living room, is what I think you're talking about here. So the HDMI cable is going to handle it. My Vizio set has got a optical cable connection, but only one of them. It's intended as an audio output. I guess there isn't a optical cable in. HDMI is going to handle that. So I vaguely remember the Vizio set. It's got about 4 different formats it'll take as an input. Only one of them is the so-called RF from the antenna. Okay, so
let me just tell you that the reason for the optical cable will still be there is a lot of 5 and 7.1 systems is separate from the TV sets audio, so that's the most expedient way of putting it in. You have some receivers that actually take HDMI in and pop HDMI out, and you can switch between different sources like DVD players and stuff like that, but that's if you want to spend the extra bucks.
Yeah, I'm very happy to hear that all these 12 million people who bought a 4K set are
going to be obsoleted. 4K does not exist over the air right now. What's the highest resolution I can get over the air right now, if it existed? Is it 1K or 2K, Eric? Go ahead.
Best you can do with our system, and by the way, there is an ATSC-1 that's 8 megahertz wide, which can handle a bit higher bit rates. But the best you can do right now is what we call 1080i, which is actually 2K. Right? Over the air, in the traditional television sense, that's your limitation. Over the air, in terms of satellite and private microwave and that kind of stuff, is you can do the 4K because the bandwidth is available. Oh, and over the internet, a lot of people are buying 4K sets so they can watch Netflix in 4K.
So you're saying the bit rate exists on the right kind of internet connection, which will give me 4K. Interesting. And so, and there are some RF links, not standard over the air broadcast, which are 8 meg wide, which I think is the European standard. I think the United Kingdom, all of their channels are 8 megs wide. Isn't that true, Eric?
Yeah, most of the rest of the world is 8 megs. There are some weirdos in there that are 6. There's another one that's 5. But those are rare things. But for the most part, most of the rest of the world uses 8 megahertz channel. But when it comes to satellite or cable, they may be transmitting into a transponder that's 150 megahertz wide, and they're doing multiple streams. They just pick off the bits of whatever it is that you want to watch. So,
one of these things you said a little earlier tonight, Eric, is that the fine details of the standard of ATSC 3 are being hammered out as we speak, and out of curiosity, they know it's going to be a 6 meg wide channel, COFDM standard. So, out of curiosity, what kind of fine details still have to be, in other words, the exact formatting of over-the-air broadcast? There's still some of those details that haven't been really tested over the air, and therefore they want to confirm that before they lock it in as a standard. Is that sort of what's going on? KE2EJ, K2RIW in the TechNet.
Not really. Let me give you a real-world example that we've faced when we made ATSC-1. There's an organization called Dolby. There's another organization that makes something called DBX. And there is another organization called AES, which has a standard. Actually, as a way of compromise, and all of the ATSC-1 your current TV receivers can deal with, you can either transmit your audio as Dolby AC-3, which could be the stereo, two channels, or 5.1. And if you're transmitting at 5.1, you're probably going to have a bit rate of 384 kilobits per second. If you're just transmitting stereo, you're going to be doing probably 192 kilobits per second. But you could also transmit PCM, which is just stuff that comes off your CD. And that'll also be running at 192 kilobits per second. So there's multiple standards, and the receivers understand each one of them and can decode them. Let me let it drop. At this point in time, pretty much the top layer, the RF layer, the interleave layer, the layer that actually pulls out and converts from RF to data, that's all done. Okay. The things that they're left working out is interactivity, how you get back to the TV station, what the special formats will be for data and stuff like that. These are little minor things that they're working out. Whereas this becomes a protocol where we're going to say, well, we have hex FA available, and we're going to make FA mean that this next coming stuff is going to be data that's going to put a little ad on the bottom of your screen. That may not actually be the thing that's going on, but that's the concept.
On a slightly different subject, Eric, in the old days of analog television, with my scanner receiver, my, what the hell is the model number of this thing, R7000 ICOM, I tuned to the RF frequency of a video, of an audio, and I could listen to the audio of channel 2, 4, 5, 7, 9, 11, 13, UHF. I could tune to the audio channel and listen to just the audio, knowing whether or not the important portion of my program is coming up, and I run into the living room and watch the real television set. So I could get the audio separately. With 8 VSB, no way can you do that. You have to demodulate the whole darn signal in order to suck out the audio. With the new COFDM, ATSC-3, is that going to be almost the same? I have to demodulate the whole darn signal to get the audio, or will a sophisticated scanner be able to get that audio for me separately without getting the rest of the video? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, I really don't think I have to take you through the difference between the digital and the audio, but the one part that you always seem to miss because you're still stuck in analog mode is that the RF gets turned into a bunch of bits, okay? The RF actually gets turned into what we call IMQ. And from that, we can get ones and zeros. And the way we actually make video or audio or data is we say that if this sequence of 1 and 0s occur, the next 188 bytes of data is video. And if this sequence of 1s and 0s occur, the next chunk of stuff is audio. So basically, you're taking the RF and you're turning it into a serial stream. And from that serial stream, you extract stuff. As opposed to analog television, we have literally two transmitters. You get one transmitter that transmits the picture, and another transmitter that transmits the audio. And they're actually able to coexist within the same megahertz because they don't flash into each other. And your receiver is capable of receiving it. So it's sort of like you can hear Moto Turbo when you tune to a frequency to sound it, but you can't make any sense out of it because it just sounds like a buzz.
By way of the in-phase and quadrature, the INQ, digitization, and the individual, I'm going to call them packets. In other words, the broadcast now consists of some audio packets, some video packets, some probably other services packets, and they're all time domain interleaved. The packets occur at a fast enough rate. The audio I hear, the video I see is all continuous because those packets are occurring at a fast enough rate, they're going into a buffer and then being displayed on the screen or played out of the loudspeaker. That's my understanding. I can see now how I have no choice but to demodulate that hold on signal to choose the right packets that have the right addressing if I want nothing but audio. Am I getting closer to the truth here, Eric? K2EJ, K2IW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, you can think of it as a 188-bit string of, a shift register. You can think of it as 188 flip-flops, and every time you clock it, you get some data. And depending upon what the header is or what the address is, it tells you what that data is. They actually do make, I don't know if you've ever seen them, they make little handheld portable LCDs, TV sets that do ATSC-1, and I've seen a couple of ATSC-1 audio receivers. They don't make picture, they just make sound. So, I mean, it's not an impossible thing to do. When you start mass producing these TV sets, you wind up putting all this stuff into one chip, and the cost of manufacturing chips comes way down. K2RIW, K2J.
Modern-day television set that I'll buy 1, 2, 3, 4 years from now, which will be primarily COFDM as far as its main analog its main over-the-air broadcast receiver capability. That set and the American standard for ATSC-3, is it at all similar to to anything going on in Europe or Asia. In other words, when Samsung makes a television set 4 years from now, will it be essentially the exact same set for Europe and the United States with just a little bit of change in the programming? Or maybe all the programming is there and you just address the right section of RAM in order to make the set work in that particular locale. Is that approximately what's going to happen, Eric? KE2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, KE2EJ. Unless Europe decides to change the line frequency and change the channel bandwidth, there's going to be some differences. But actually, even the ATSC-3 sets, the ATSC-1 set that you're now buying, there's a couple of them where you just change a couple of jumpers in there and it becomes a DVB-T receiver. But I'm sure you're aware that your current TV set that you just bought from Vizio not only works over the air, but it also understands QAM. So you can hook your cable to it and get pictures out of it. So that's not a big deal. And interestingly enough, your current ATSC-1 TV receiver is still capable of decoding analog, and that's a single chip these days.
When I watch channel 20-1 or 2, is that a digital channel or is that an analog channel, Eric? Go ahead.
You're talking the Seventh Day Adventist?
Roger, Dodger.
20-1 looks pretty horrible. It's got a bad satellite receiver. I keep complaining to them that they need to change that, but they're cheap. Actually, what that is that gets the Hope channel off the satellite and just puts it on the digital TV. It's digital. It ain't analog. I mean, the source of it is crappy, but the source is actually analog. But it's broadcast on a satellite digital, so there you go.
Yeah, quite often it's got 20-1, shows you a blue screen saying unauthorized video or something, unauthorized format.
That's the bad receiver I'm talking about.
So that's what's being broadcast. They're telling you that...
I went and fixed that a little while ago.
Oh, I didn't know you were in charge of that. Where is that actually being transmitted from, Eric?
Tower.
Okay, yeah. The machine was giving an ID. Say that again.
No, it's tower. Next door.
How about that? So it's a fraction of a mile from you, and therefore roughly 3 miles from me. And I have the impression it's not a super high power transmitter, is it?
700 watts.
Okay. It's 700 watts. Whereas you're running more like 5 kilowatts, isn't that true?
My antenna is very low gain. Whereas my antenna, my ERP is 95 kilowatts.
You're getting, 30 dB of gain out of your broadcast antenna, UHF?
I think it's like 17.
Okay, 17, let's see now. If I convert decibels into a real number, that's 50-1. So roughly 50 individual elements vertically stacked would give you... No. Doesn't require that much. Yeah, I guess it does. Your broadcast antenna is probably in the vicinity of 20 feet from top to bottom. Isn't that true, Eric?
It's a side mount antenna. It's actually two segments, so there's a bunch of gain there.
The total number of feet top to bottom of those two segments, is it in the vicinity of 20 feet?
Yeah, it may even be a little bigger than that.
Yeah, from that, I can easily calculate your pancake pattern. What is its vertical beam width? If you are not using, what do they call that, cosecant squared, amplitude distribution. You're probably
not, and it's a peanut.
Okay. It's a pancake pattern at 360 degrees. Is there any low angle fill in on the...
There's no downward tilt on this one. On the one on top, which has less gain, because that's the one that used to be a megawatt, that's got a 1 degree tilt on it. But the one that I'm on now doesn't. And the actual pattern is more like a peanut.
Okay, so it's favoring the length of Long Island. That makes a lot of sense. By the way, you can take the whole Don pancake pattern, peanut pattern, and give it a downward tilt. That's one approach. You can aim it at the horizon and create an antenna pattern that has some fill-in lobes at lower elevation angles. My guess is you use the first, not the second. Is that true?
Well, I find when I use this antenna as opposed to the other one, I do a little better closer in, and I do a little better with the grade B, too.
When it comes to not people like Joe, who put up a good antenna with a preamplifier and whatever, he likes doing television DXing with an antenna rotator. When it comes to typical over-the-air broadcast antenna mounted on the chimney of a house type receiving person, and there's only one of them in the whole community called Dick Sittles, and you're talking to him. Anyhow, when it comes to a typical television viewer, who has got the greatest range on reception on Long Island to Channel 21 that you know of, Eric? So go ahead.
Well, do you want to know rabbit ears or a little better than that?
A little better than that.
All right, well, I got somebody using a loop in Smithtown that doesn't seem to have any problem. I've got a guy on I guess it's a 25-foot tower out in Quo. He's got no problem either, except for an occasional little bit of fade. He's pretty near the water. You can also get a couple of the city stations. But typical home antenna, places in Queens where I know, I used to pick it up there, no problem. It didn't take much of an antenna either. There's a couple places in New Jersey where it's just on the roof, and they do okay too. As far as just on the roof on the island, I don't know of anybody, but I've heard that there's people all over the place. Some in Brookhaven and even further out on the North Shore. So, WK2J.
WS to us.
I was about to call you, Paul. So there's a guy in Ronkonkoma who I guarantee is watching Channel 21. Is that true, Paul?
I was going to tell you 100% all the time. Of course, I didn't have it on this morning, but I get that all the time. In fact, today I had it on. Naturally, there's a bunch of 21s, but I had the Roy Orbison concert on. So, yeah, 100%.
That friend of yours in Smithtown, Eric, that's only 15 or so miles. And,
yeah, but, you know, it's funny. When you look from, say, Huntington towards here, you get the hill in the way. The antenna barely, you know, is over the top of it.
It's so-called Jane's Hill, which is near Route 110. Paul, your best guess from Ronkonkoma to Plainview, you probably has a healthy, 25 or so miles over you, Paul?
I would say so, and I'm further than Smithtown because Smithtown is like due north of me, so, you know, it's a bit of an angle. Probably a little further to me. So, but, you know, no problem. Then again, I get the city stations, and I get 13. But no problem coming out of Plainview.
You know, if you look at from a topography point of view, you get 375 real well. You can get 375 almost pretty well out to 110, but once you go up the hill, forget it.
You said get 375. What does the word 375 mean?
Peter, you happen to be broadcasting on also.
I was using the television section of my brain. I couldn't figure out what 375 means. Now I got to slip over to the ham radio section. Yes, 147.375 repeater. I wasn't using the right section of brain, Eric. I know you and I have got a slight difference of opinion on this subject, but back in the analog days, yes, we could tolerate a snowy picture, and a good number of people were getting television 70, 80, 90 miles away. And once we went over to ATSC 1, digital over-the-air broadcast, without a doubt, we get a cleaner picture, but considerably shorter range. Do you have a guess as to...
We really don't agree with that.
You know, we don't agree on that one. So we're going to agree to disagree a little bit on this one, Eric. When it goes over to the ATSC 3, COFDM standard, do you believe the current range will get better, or do you think the current ATSC 1 range will be about the same? What's your guess as to what the new standard will be like in range, Eric? K2L interview.
Well, that's going to depend on a lot of factors.
Okay.
Just remember this. To transmit COFDM, which is less efficient in terms of power usage, so you're going to be sucking up more power to, or at least equal what we got here. But you're going to have less artifacts that bother you. You're going to have less things that make it not work happen. And in Europe, they use the COFDM simply because at the power level that they operate, and contain it within the boundaries of a country, which may not be bigger than Rhode Island. So they had their reasons for going that way in the first place. We chose the 8BSB because its characteristics are very much similar to the amplitude modulation. It is amplitude modulation to start with, so, you know. We just don't think of it that way because when we look at it on a spectrum analyzer, it just looks like a flat line.
WS2N, one more comment.
Yeah, I think you call it a barge head, barge haircut display on a spectrum analyzer. WS2N, K2RW, go ahead, Paul.
Another big improvement, you know, the old antenna I used to have, you know, before the digital days, it was massive, you know, it was a big log periodic type thing, you know, I mean, it was big enough, if you had it in the backyard, you could have used it as a clothesline, it was huge, and all kinds of... I had rods up there holding it so it wouldn't bend over in the wind. It did bend over one time. So that's all gone away with. Plus, I had an amplifier attached to the pole, all gone. And now I just have this little antenna. Maybe it takes up, you know, one square foot, like a little eight element type of antenna, very small antenna. And it attached to a little 10-foot pole on the chimney, and it does a super job. So we've eliminated this antenna problem as far as I'm concerned. Yeah, it is an antenna, but it doesn't have to be this massive thing back either.
That brings up an important thought. Yeah, some of that largeness was because of channel 54 to 60 megacycle, channel 2, which has now almost become non-over the air. Go ahead, Eric.
Oh, that's all fine and dandy. We forget about the technology that makes that possible. In the days of the bug, the big ugly dish, there are a number of characteristics that you could really point out in relation to our current TV, and let me just get to that. But first, the reason why we've gone from the big ugly dish to the little tiny thing is that the transponders in the satellites used to be 10 watts, 15 watts, 5 watts. Now you're talking 150 watts, 200 watts, so you get a lot more signal coming down at you. You don't need as much gain to get it. But the point that I really wanted to make is that in the analog days, when we satellites made the transition from analog to digital, when they made a drop, you could get by with a... let's call it a snowy picture because, I mean, FM has a different characteristic to it. You still watch the stuff, okay? But what we found out when we started doing QPSK or even BPSK on the satellite is that what used to be a horribly, miserably, you know, bad-looking picture is now a perfect picture. the actual point of sensitivity based on the transponders within the satellites, it was like a huge major improvement. You could have a dish that was bent out of shape and barely, you know, picking up the right beam, and you get a nice solid picture out of it, and in analog it would just be nothing. So, in terms of being the difference between analog and digital, in that kind of a situation, that has error correction and all that stuff, but not to the extent of what we do for terrestrial. But it's a good point. KQRW, KQJ.
Yeah, the 18-inch dish that everyone's using for satellite reception these days is looking at a really potent transmitter signal coming out of that satellite, as opposed to the 8-10-foot dish, the so-called television receive only terminals, the TVROs, that you call the big ugly dishes. They were looking at 5-watt transponders at 22,300 miles, so a lot more ground gain was required. Slightly different subject, Eric. Current ATSC 1 8VSB over-the-air broadcast has, in my opinion, a significant amount of co-channel interference vulnerability. I don't know the exact number. You're going to correct me on this one, but if I'm getting co-channel interference because my exact RF channel is simultaneously coming from Philadelphia.
You know, you're a special case with your antenna at the height that it is.
Agreed. But if I'm getting, if anybody is getting a co-channel that is not 15 or so decibels weaker, you're going to get some dropouts. Will the new system, and is it 15 dB the number, and Joe can give us a, Joe's really done some experiments on this, where he probably knows the exact number. Anyhow, will the new COFDM be a little bit less vulnerable to co-channel interference? KE2EJ, KJRIW.
From what I've read, our version of it is close to what the European version of it is in terms of its ability to differentiate between the co-channels. And I think ours is in terms of signal and noise, if it winds up being over minus 14 or 15, you're in trouble. But not dead in the water. I think when it gets to be like 20 or something like that, it starts to be really annoying. The tolerances in COFDM much greater. I think we're into the minus 27s and the minus 28s in that neighborhood before it becomes intolerable. But if that's the worst case in terms of co-channel, that's a pretty rare exception. But the thing where you really benefit is in multipath and being things moving and shifting around, because it is all these multiple carriers, the receiver's got a lot more stuff to work with.
And right now, if I'm getting multipath, if I'm getting reflection off the water tower as well as direct signal path for my 8VSB over the air, if I don't have an antenna, a television receiving antenna, where I can aim it so I can get some of those notches in the antenna pattern aimed toward that water tower, I am guessing if that delayed path is, I'm going to pick a number, 50 nanoseconds delayed and less than 15 dB weaker, there's a good chance I'm going to get a dropout. Will the COFDM be a little bit more forgiving along those lines, Eric? You seem to be saying yes. So in other words, if my COFDM signal is 50 nanoseconds delayed and only 8 dB weaker, it is likely that my set will be able to properly demodulate that. K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, you understand QAM, right? Think of it as, say 1024 QAM. And that's spread across 6 megahertz. So the propagation delay at various different frequencies is going to be a little bit different in terms of its behavior. You know, the angle of reflection and so on and so forth. Well, the short answer is, yeah, it's more forgiving. The mechanics behind it The physics behind it is a little bit interesting.
If I had a level 3, a level 5, or a level 7 equalizer, in other words, demodulator sophistication on my 8 VSB,